Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Thursday, June 15th. I am Matt Harmon coming to you live from the CondoCast once again here in Virginia Beach. Only if, I don't want to make any promises, but we're kind of running out here in terms of episodes on the old CondoCast. We actually might be getting out of here and into a real house here very, very soon, but we'll see about that. What I can say for sure is this is going to be an excellent episode of the podcast. Not only we're joined by two absolute 49ers legends on this show. We've got George Kittle coming up later in the program. You may have heard of him, who you've definitely heard of, another 49ers legend, Dalton Del Don, here with me to try to find the next edition of our Flip the Script series. Who is going to be this year's Josh Jacobs? I dare say it's probably going to be our most challenging one yet. And Dalton, I could think of, but nobody better to join me for that challenge than you. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Doing well, Harmon. How's it going? Pumped to be on the same episode as my guy Kittle. Excited. Let's do this.
Yeah, man, this is going to be awesome. I don't think there's any news, anything percolating in your mind out of minicamp, or should we just get right into it?
No, yeah, let's get right to it. Let's go.
All right, so like I said, we're now in the fifth installment of our summer series called Flip the Script. For the month of June, we have been going back to look at the biggest surprises from last season, try to predict who are going to be the biggest surprises of this season. Like I said, I think this could be our most challenging one yet because of how, I don't want to say like, unique last year's event was, but really just it's tough to kind of find like a perfect candidate for who is going to be this year's Josh Jacobs. But basically, Dalton, I think we're trying to find, you know, the most surprising potential top five running back finish. We'll get into some of my parameters a little later, but I think it is worth revisiting just how unexpected that Josh Jacobs 2022 season was. For a reminder, I look back at our Yahoo consensus rankings in late August. We know that Andy Behrens was like the lone, you know, flag planter for Josh Jacobs. He had him at running back 18, which was well above consensus. As a group, we had him at running back 24. Dalton, you were actually the second highest. Then it went me. Then it went Scott in terms of who was highest on Jacobs. But like consensusly, he was ranked behind Chase Edmonds in our rankings. I mean, LOL. The guy played for two teams last year, barely made any impact. I was in on Chase Edmonds last year, so I'll cop to making that mistake. He was our 48th overall player. I peeped a few like other sites, Dalton, and he was, you know, being ranked, drafted around like the 70th overall player. Fast forward to the end of the year, he finishes at the RB3. He led the NFL in rushing yards. He scored 12 touchdowns. He caught 53 passes. He was awesome. He's currently trying to cash in on that season and get a big contract. He's currently, quote, slated to play on the franchise tag. We'll see how that ends up going. But Dalton, I think it's gonna be tough again to find somebody to replicate this. But where did we go wrong with Jacobs last year? You know, how could we have seen this coming? What mistakes could we try to avoid as we're trying to pick out like this year's version of Josh Jacobs?
Yeah, I didn't have any Jacobs last year. I did not see this coming. First of all, yes, props to Andy who actually did kind of see this coming if he squinted, but he was a much better player last year. You look at his success rate, 2019, 40%, 38%, 40%, and then last year jumped to 46%. But if you look back, maybe I overrated him. I said he was injury prone, but he was only missing a couple games per season. He was constantly banged up, but he was fighting through them. And then maybe I just listened to the team declining that fifth year option. They said, I think there was rumblings of using a third down back, and I just really overrated that. There wasn't any big name that was to be scared on the roster, and he just dominated the touches and got better and put it all the doubters' faces like myself. I didn't see it coming at all. And I'm not sure what lesson to learn as far as looking back at Jacobs, a player who just became such a better player his fourth year in the league. We all reference like Le'Veon Bell and running back showing big leaps and getting better, but it's usually year two in the league, not becoming a superstar your fourth year in the league. So I don't know. I think it's a pretty rare circumstance what he did because he was awesome.
Just a reminder, I think you're bringing back last August too. Like the one preseason game everyone watches is obviously
The Hall of Fame and game. The Hall of Fame game. Yes.
Yeah. And he played well into, I want to say, the second half, which scared me and I think scared everyone in August.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the big lessons is not to overreact to preseason playing time.
That's a good one.
But like the one thing I would say too is that that was kind of a continuation of like an off season of negativity for Josh Jacobs. Like you mentioned, Dalton, it started with the fifth year option being pulled, like not being given to him. You know, that was, you know, that was a bit difficult. You know, and then like even our own Charles Robinson, like I can remember going, you know, he went to Raiders camp and was like, this is going to be a committee backfield. You know, this is going to be like a rotation like we used to see in New England, which, you know, maybe that was like falling into the narrative of, you know, typical old Patriots backs, like committee, that whole thing. But also, I think you could argue that the Raiders went into like last offseason thinking, okay, we're not committed to Josh Jacobs. We don't like this dude that much. Like, let's bring in Mir Abdul. Let's bring in Zamir White. Let's bring in Brandon Bolden. Like, we are going to make this a committee. And Jacobs was just straight up too good to, you know, to, he kind of blew up those plans basically. And I think, like, I remember talking to Andy about Jacobs last year, and his point was that, no, like, this is actually a good NFL player. Like, you're right, Dalton. Like, he jumped into a tier this year that he hadn't previously been in. But you look at his, like, first three seasons, just on raw stats, like, they're pretty good. You know, 1,100 yards, 7 touchdowns as a rookie in 13 games. In 15 games the second season, over 1,000 yards, 1,065 yards, 12 touchdowns, 879 yards and 9 touchdowns in 15 games the year prior. Like, he didn't have a huge background as a receiver, but he did catch 50 balls in 2021. So, again, I think you could make the argument that we were following the tea leaves a little too much and just ignoring, at least this was what Andy's argument was last year, is that, like, if you're going to, you know, get into all these, like, yards after contact and, like, broken tackle metrics, you know, those were really good for Josh Jacobs as much as they were for a guy like Javonte Williams. So, That's kind of, I guess, one lesson is, you know, sometimes the success rate stats for running backs can be very situation driven. They can be very offensive ecosystem driven, offensive line driven, even quarterback driven sometimes. And like, if you just focus in on the guy's actual rushing ability, Jacobs was a good player. And, you know, I think that we got caught up in the weeds a little bit too much. So that's kind of my one thing about Jacobs that I'm taking away from. But like you said, very unique case. And I think it's going to be hard to find like someone to replicate that.
All that's fair. The broken tackle numbers were there. And maybe the efficiency stats were also hurt a bit by him playing through those injuries. And we saw what he finally could do by staying healthy for the full season. And you're right, though. It's going to be difficult to come up with a this year's version. Although I do have a decent candidate, which didn't make your initial top 10 list, I must point out. So let's get to it.
I'm excited to find out who your guy is. So my 10 that I came up with, and we're going to do this a little bit differently than we have previously, because we do have Kittle coming up on the show. You know, we can't spend a damn hour and a half talking about all these running backs, you know, as much as people might like us to. I came up with 10 candidates. We're going to narrow it down to like 5 to 6 guys and then drill in heavy on those. My 10 guys here, Dalton. And again, for parameters with this, I think it can't be a rookie. It's got to be a guy we sort of know who he is, just like with Jacobs last year. I cut it off at a non-RB1 in current expert consensus rankings. I'd even say like he should be or is a guy that could slide eventually through an offseason, just like Jacobs did, being ranked around the running back dead zone, quote unquote. And I would say the player also has to have experienced some offseason turbulence the last few months. So my 10 list of candidates: Kenneth Walker. I think he's my most cheating answer, but I'll go with Kenneth Walker here. Number 2, Miles Sanders, Cam Akers, Dalvin Cook, Isaiah Pacheco, Brian Robinson, Damian Harris, James Conner, David Montgomery. And number 10, I was like, does J.K. Dobbins count? I really like him this year, but I don't know. I'll leave that up to you. So you can tell me which of these like 5 to 6 guys stands out. And I also want to hear who your surprise candidate that I didn't consider was.
Well, first of all, I agree. Kenneth Walker is kind of a cheating answer. It's probably the right answer here of among your candidates. I'm not sure the tweet was out. Maybe it was Hayden Winks, but he did a highlight of his 10 rushes with his worst EPA or whatever. Because, you know, everyone cites his success rate. He was the lowest success rate among all rushers. Mm-hmm. Man, those 10 did not look like his fault at all. It really didn't. I'm in on Walker. I think he's the real deal. I get the rookie might be very good as well, but I think Walker still should be treated as, you know, borderline top 15. Drafted back here. So yeah, we could talk. I mean, you probably want to go through these Miles Sanders and Cam Akers a little bit more in depth, but I will say throw Isaiah Pacheco out here. I would even argue that CEH is a better candidate, a guy who was turned down the fifth year option, better pedigree. Pacheco coming off all these injury, these surgeries, and we've written off CEH. We think we know who whom he is, but he's the guy that could just totally surprise everyone. And in that offense, I think he had twice as like his explosion weeks last year was still twice as many spike weeks as Pacheco had. Like, I think the upside's there for PPR. So I'd even argue CEH is a better candidate than Pacheco here. But what do you want me to go through? I mean, what'd you prefer here, to tell you mine or to go through these each one?
Yeah, tell me your surprise one, and then we'll try to just narrow it down to five and six so we can drill in on the five to six guys.
Okay, maybe he's a little too good here, but his it's my pick is Joe Mixon. He's a similar age, still just 26 years old, inefficient back who's battled injuries, who's looking at all the touches suddenly. His ADP is outside top 50 right now. He's experienced offseason turbulence. There's still a suspension kind of looming there. We sort of know who he is. You wouldn't think of him having his upside at this stage of his career, kind of like we wouldn't have with Josh Jacobs. But man, Mixon saw, I think it was 84% of the attempts before suffering a concussion in week 11. And now Samaje Perine's gone. I mean, who else is on the depth chart? Travion Williams, Chase Brown. I get that there's a release still on the table for Mixon, and there was some chatter by one of the owners in a radio interview earlier, but I think that's why his price is so down. He's clearly their guy on one of the league's best offense. Mixon's one season removed from scoring 16 touchdowns and available outside the top 50. So Mixon's my guy.
He was running back 12 last year, but he did slip to like 3.9 yards per carry. A lot of that was boosted by that one game. I think Mixon makes sense because, yeah, he's running back 16 in consensus rankings right now. He probably makes a little bit more sense than Kenneth Walker, who's running back 15. So I like Mixon. I think we put Mixon on the list.
Maybe that's a cheating answer, too. It's our two cheating answers, but I liked how Mixon fell in there. But, yeah, I thought him as boring. I wanted no part of him for the first couple months. But, man, the more you think about it, it's just like, even if he doesn't step up his play, which, again, still in his prime, 26 years old, he came in the league so young. He's just in such a good situation and so many touches there. I think he's being way undervalued.
I think we keep him on the list. One guy I would really fight to include in our five of six is Brian Robinson. So that's two. Give me three to four other names that you think we should definitely include, and we can throw the rest out.
Okay. David Montgomery here, just because we'll talk more about him, but David Montgomery, because of the situation he's going into. And you got to do James Conner because of the volume. And Cam Akers, Miles Sanders.
Okay, cool. I just for the record, I really like J.K. Dobbins, but I think he's...
It's a cheat one, yeah.
It's a cheating one. Kenneth Walker's a cheating one. Dalvin Cook could be nice to know who he's going to play for. I think Damien Harris is actually going to, like, has the potential to get steamed up too high at a certain point. Like, he's not going to have, like, the stink on him, like, with fantasy analysts and stuff like that. And yeah, I'm with you on Isaiah Pacheco that I think you could get to a point where Pacheco gets like people talk themselves out of him too much. But I don't know. I just really like his running style. So I think that's it. So, all right. Our five our candidates here, Miles Sanders, Cam Akers, Brian Robinson, James Montgomery, Jesus.
Combine them.
James Conner, David Montgomery, and Joe Mixon. That's our six candidates. We're going to get it down to a finalist list of three. And then we'll rank and pick our winners. So let's start with Joe Mixon and just kind of continue that conversation, Dalton, because I totally get it. I think when you're looking at these guys here, he's definitely reached the highest peak. I think if you polled like the casual NFL fan, they would rank him the best player among our group of guys here. But he's also certainly, I would say, set up to succeed the most because of the offense that he's in.
Yeah, I'd say the best counter is this if I'm cheating here and he's too good. As you said, he finished too high the season before. But again, ADP, outside top 50, certainly offseason turmoil. I mean, he's still, there's a pre-trial for him. I mean, he's involved in a situation that may result in a suspension, but that also easily could not. And again, the depth chart might be among the weakest in the entire league behind him when it comes to the running back position.
Yeah, totally. I think that there's a chance that... Again, people talk themselves into like Travion Williams. They talk themselves into Chase Brown. I think it's important to know who the backup running back for this team is, just because of where Joe Mixon is at this point in his career, just in case something does happen legally. But I also kind of feel like his offseason ADP is bound to, like, once we get to regular drafts, like, I think he could easily leapfrog. Like, I'm just looking at like consensus rank guys. He could leap Walker. He could leap Aaron Jones. You know, I think he could even leapfrog guys like Travis Etienne and Najee Harris, and maybe even Breece Hall. Like, by the time we get to actual August drafts, if he has had a clean offseason, which is kind of why I struggled to put him among the three finalists here, even though I think if you're talking about like bounce back running back candidates, he's probably the easiest answer there.
Fair. That's totally fair. All right. Who's the next?
All right. Let's talk David Montgomery, because you had a couple points about him. And I'll just say before we get to Montgomery, you know, like Jahmyr Gibbs right now is running back 17 in consensus rankings. And David Montgomery is running back 27. It's like, you sure? Are we sure about that? Like, are you sure the gap there it should be so big? Like, I think there's a scenario, Dalton, where David Montgomery gets, and I know targets are more valuable than rushes in fantasy, even in half PPR, that's still true. But like, I think there's a scenario where David Montgomery gets like 150 more carries than Jahmyr Gibbs this year. And I think that ranking is a little too far, and maybe it should just be outright flipped. I don't know. What do you think?
I love Gibbs. I'm going to overdraft him. So in on him. But that said, you're probably right as far as the carries with Montgomery. And listen to this role he's taking over. Jamal Williams last year had 16 more carries inside the 10 than any other running back. 28 carries inside the 5, 12 more than any other running back. Like 17 expected rushing touchdowns, 6 more than the next most. And that should be the role he's playing. So, and it's not like Jamal Williams is anything special. If anything, Montgomery is a reasonable facsimile, if not better. So, I think, he could do this here. What if Gibbs gets hurt right away? I mean, he's a rookie. Who knows? I mean, I love his upside, but you don't know if these guys can translate to the NFL physically, if they can hold up. So Montgomery could be in just this amazing role, and the Lions offense should remain really potent. I like what they're doing. So, yeah, I mean, Montgomery's a candidate.
It hasn't been said, too. Like, that offensive line is young and might be, like, ready to be the best offensive line in football.
Best.
Penei Sewell is a absolute rock star.
Dominant.
100%. Yeah. The ecosystem is great, just like what we saw with Jamal Williams last year. And, you know, look, I said, I mean, Scott really came after the Lions on our last episode. He buried the Lions' optimism pretty hard. I'm not all the way where he is there, but I do have questions about this passing game right now. You know, I think that I've said it on last several episodes, like, who are they throwing the ball to beyond 15, 20 yards when Jameson Williams is suspended? I think they really need another receiving presence there. And I think that could get, again, in a way, that could be what gets Jahmyr Gibbs overdrafted. But I think if you're looking at this team right now, the line is a great point. David Montgomery has just been like a solid NFL player. They could really be more run heavy, I think, overall as a team, Dalton, than we're probably expecting.
You know, Montgomery can catch the ball too, and this just hit me. This is actually, Montgomery's a really good comp to Jacobs, because aren't those two like the most cited tackle-breaking machines? And in college, yeah. Montgomery, he can't do much with it after. Like, he doesn't get a lot of yards after, but he's the other guy. Everyone loves the tackle-breaking ability throughout college. So he really could fit here, and he's in such a good ecosystem. I hear you. There's some questions about, but maybe that just means a million targets to Gibbs and Montgomery the first half of the season before Williams returns. I mean, that offense was just on fire. They were scoring like 30 points plus points per game at home last year. Just looked like Coors Field. So Montgomery is a definite short candidate for me.
I think he has to be on our finalist list. And that's a great point about the broken tackles metrics. You know, I can hear Brad Evans now like screaming about it when he was coming in the league, right?
Yeah,
100%. And he's another guy that's like, oh, look at the broken tackles per attempt list. Like, wow, Nick Chubb's up there, Javonte Williams, those guys are so good. Don't look at David Montgomery over there. That doesn't really make my point. But even when he first signed with the team, we were, you know, before the Jahmyr Gibbs pick, it's like, well, DeAndre Swift is banged now because David Montgomery can actually play in the passing game. And now in a weird way, we're like, wow, David Montgomery's banged because Jahmyr Gibbs is going to play all the passing snaps, which might be possible, but we also might be wrong about that. So I think David Montgomery is a really fantastic candidate for this. And like, again, I'm not as down on the Lions as Scott is, even if I have my questions. I think Scott would even say like, the damn Lions are definitely going to be better than the Raiders last year. And it really is kind of miraculous that in a crappy offense for Las Vegas, at least, I mean, I would say maybe not crappy, but, you know, underwhelming offense for the Raiders last year, or at least like a non-elite offense, Jacobs managed to have that kind of season. I think David Montgomery in a much better situation, as you mentioned. So I know you want to talk James Conner too. Let's hit James Conner. You know, I mean, look, dude, I'm not trying to draft too many Cardinals this year. I don't think this is going to be a very good team. I don't think it's going to be a very good offense. I do think the volume is really good for Marquise Brown, who we've talked about on the pod. But hey, look at that depth chart right now. Like, how is James Conner, when he's healthy, not going to moonwalk into, you know, 15 plus touches in a game?
Yeah, apologies for who tweeted it, I forget. But over the last 2 years without Kyler Murray, James Murray's average points per game would be the number one fantasy back. I mean, I don't expect anything close to that this year, and he's an injury risk big time. But I mean, there's just no one else on the depth chart there. He's going to get all, he can catch the three down back. He's going to get all the goal line carries. They're not going to be, they're probably going to be one of the worst offenses, but just his situation you're looking at there with the touches, another boring veteran whom we think we know who he is. He kind of fits in this role here as far as I don't really see it, but you just said the Raiders offense last year wasn't anything special either. And Jacobs put up that monster season. So I think, yeah, given the candidates here, Connor's one of the short lists.
Yep. I think it makes for a really good short list guy as well. I mean, he's a good player. Like, this is the thing with where we lost with Josh Jacobs last year. And I mean, Josh Jacobs, I think, had shown, I mean, I guess he'd shown himself to be a better player than James Conner at his peak. And James Conner is definitely on like the wrong side of what you're looking for from an age perspective with running back. But he's been a quality back. Basically, anytime he's been a feature guy, injuries are a risk. But like you said, injuries were kind of a risk with Josh Jacobs last year. And I think the risk for Conner often gets overstated. I think the risk for Jacobs got overstated. It's just like, dude, I mean, how many... I really do feel uncomfortable tethering myself to an offense that might be quarterbacked by, yeah, like, we keep saying Colt McCoy, but like Colt McCoy is a huge question mark himself from a concussion standpoint. Yeah. So I don't know, man, but I agree with you. I think he makes a short list here. I think he makes a short list. So two guys I think maybe we're both less excited about is Miles Sanders and Cam Akers. Let's talk about Cam Akers real quick before we get to Miles Sanders. Where are you at with Cam Akers, who finished the year really strong last year? I think people are you know, kind of, again, expert consensus rank of running back 21. That's fine. I think he probably doesn't have a lot of room to go up from there. I don't necessarily see where he has a lot of room to go down from there either. I think that's kind of like a fair ranking for Cam Akers. But where do you stand on him in terms of this list?
A couple months ago, I was a little bit higher, but now I'm definitely more toward the market. It's funny you say that. I have him exactly as my RB21. Down the stretch, he definitely dominated. The snaps rate per week was 76%, 75%, 78%, and then 100% the final week. They fell back in love with Cam Akers. But Zach Evans kind of looms there, and who knows with McVay, and that could be an awful offense too. So I feel like that's right where he belongs, is right around running back 20. There's definitely upside for more though. I mean, he's shown flashes in the past. Maybe he's finally healthy and he could, you know, back in Sean McVay's system, getting 80% of the snaps is upside. So I could see it going either way here. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, is that I can see it going either way. Like, McVay definitely has had a wandering eye at the running back position since Todd Gurley, and, like, you know, just hasn't been able to find that type of guy. Akers has definitely had his moments. Like, he necessarily hasn't had like offseason turbulence. The only guy they really add is, as you mentioned, Zach Evans, who Matt Waldman came on the podcast and sang like the praises of Zach Evans. And I was really excited about what he was saying there. And I think there is definitely a scenario where Zach Evans, like, I think, I don't know what the percentage is or how likely it is, but I think it exists somewhere on the range of outcomes that, like, Zach Evans is starting over Cam Akers at some point. Totally. But Cam Akers has definitely had a turbulent last, you know, what do you want to call it? Like 12 months, 15 months with the LA Rams. So I think he fits in that regard. And I think he's a guy that we probably feel like we know who he is, but the fact, like, the farther that he gets away from the Achilles, maybe he, you know, has that type of comeback from that. So I don't know. I could talk myself into him either way here. I don't necessarily feel super bullish on him as a finalist here, but I don't know, the way we're thinking about it, like, the ceiling, I guess, does exist. It's probably more dependent on Stafford playing, on Kupp playing. And that's the funny thing about the Rams. It's like, as much as we want to throw dirt on the Rams, if Matthew Stafford plays more than half the season, that half the season, they're going to be a really good offense.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the Kupp just restructured his contract. I wonder if they're going to enter the Hopkins sweepstakes. They could use another receiver there. But it all depends on Stafford's health this year with the Rams, for sure.
I don't feel super bullish on him. Like, I don't think I'm going to vote for him over David Montgomery and James Conner. So I don't think we put him among our three finalists. Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Good with me, yeah.
Okay, Miles Sanders, another guy that I think we sort of kind of know who he is. Like, I think we all agree Miles Sanders is a good back. He was a really awesome fantasy pick last year. He was not necessarily used in the passing game really at any point the last couple of years with the Eagles, but I think there's a chance he could be used more in the passing game with the Carolina Panthers. I'm not sure how I feel about the Panthers offense overall that really lacks like a dude in the receiver room. I think they have like NFL caliber players. I think the offensive line is really good in Carolina. You know, I think Bryce Young can be a pro ready guy that plays early and plays pretty well early. I love the coaching staff there. I don't know. People feel kind of like on Miles Sanders based on rankings, based on like the way he's discussed, but I might end up being like a little bit ahead of consensus with Miles Sanders, like at running back 19. May I could see him being like a 16, 17 type guy, but I mean, that's like a couple spots and I don't necessarily see like top five ceiling for him. How do you feel about it?
I have him one spot below Akers. One way Sanders fits this exercise perfectly is I believe Andy Behrens is very bullish on him, like he was Jacobs last year.
There we go.
I can see it for sure. The bullish case for Sanders, maybe he takes the backfield all to himself. Maybe he starts getting catches. Now they have a decent quarterback in Bryce Young breaking out right away, who's impressing so far. But on the other side, he does have one of the best yards per carry in NFL history, but he's certainly benefited from that offensive line, that system in Hurts. And Miles Sanders had the fourth most red zone rushes last year. So while the Eagles, yes, Hurts dominated a lot of those carries, Sanders was in an awesome situation, and now he's going to a Panthers rebuilding team with a totally different offensive line. Yes, he fits it for a candidate of this, but you know, I could see it just like Akers. I could see this going either way, but certainly there's a bullish case for him taking over and suddenly seeing more targets.
Yeah, that the targets thing I think is the key. And you know, I know Deuce Staley obviously had coached Miles Sanders in Philly. They had spent some time together there. So I think that's probably why this signing was made. You know, when he first took that running back coach job and running back slash assistant head coach job for Carolina, he had said, like, I prefer to rotate like 2-3 guys, whatever. And that is obviously what they did in Detroit last year, even like getting Justin Jackson involved in the DeAndre Swift slash Jamal Williams mix at certain times. But like, Dalton, look at this depth chart right now. Like, who are they mixing in with Miles Sanders? Like, who is taking, you know, Chuba Hubbard is still Hubbard, there, yeah. But he's a Matt Rhule guy. He was definitely, and I mean, Chuba Hubbard's like he's a fine back. I don't think he's anything special. I think he's just like, okay, backup type guy. You know, the only other guys on the depth chart is like Spencer Brown, Raheem Blackshear. Like there's not somebody here. I think that's like, even the fear about Amir Abdullah taking passing down work from Josh Jacobs, which when you think back on it, really wasn't that founded. Even if he played some passing snaps, he just was never going to get like thrown the ball a ton. There's not even like an Amir Abdullah type presence on this roster to take away receiving work from Miles Sanders.
No, it's wide open. You're right. That is one of the thinnest depth charts in the backfield. And, you know, young receivers and tight ends too. I don't know Bryce Young's target rate to backs in college. I'd be interested because he could be looking at a ton of targets if he can handle it, Miles Sanders. So there is a bull case for him without a doubt. And he's another guy who's so efficient. I mean, again, one of the best yards per carry in NFL history. So if he can continue that, you know, approach that type of efficiency with way more way more touches, then yeah, it could be a fantasy goldmine.
And it's not necessarily a one-to-one thing, but, you know, 63 targets, Miles Sanders rookie year, 52 targets, and, you know, only had 28 catches on those 52 targets, but regardless, hang with me here. Where he really fell off as a receiver was the last 2 years, and that's with Jalen Hurts at the helm.
He didn't throw it at all. Yeah, never. He's the lowest target rate to the backs in the league, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, historically, rushing quarterbacks don't throw to their running backs because it's like if they're getting to that point in the progression, they're not checking it down. They're taking off. And, you know, Bryce Young definitely has some scrambling ability. He has some improvisation ability, but he is probably not going to. I mean, if he's the runner that Jalen Hurts is, he's going to play 2 games per year because of how small he is. So, yeah, that's definitely not happening. All right. So do we want to put Miles Sanders? I'm going to still talk about Brian Robinson because I think he's actually my favorite candidate. But do we want to put Miles Sanders among the three finalists and then maybe I can convince you to squeeze Robinson into this?
I think you talked into Sanders actually because of that depth chart. Yeah, I think you did. Yeah. If we're going to put James Conner's on there, then we got to put Sanders on there.
I agree. I think Miles Sanders makes a lot of sense there. Good player that I think people are going to talk themselves out of this year because of his lack of receiving pedigrees. All right, Brian Robinson. I think he is my favorite candidate for this list.
And interesting. I mean, all the Antonio Gibson hype right now. Bieniemy loves Gibson. So much hype. Even Chris Rodriguez a little buzz. All right, let's hear it.
Exactly. Like, I think that's why he kind of makes sense as a Josh Jacobs guy, because we're here. I mean, Dalton, how many times have you sat here on a podcast in June and said the words like all the Antonio Gibson hype? I'm not talking about you.
Every offseason. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm talking about the collective you of fantasy analysts, fantasy Twitter, whatever. And I've been in on Antonio Gibson previously, but this coaching staff, and I get it, it's a different coach pulling the trigger here now in Eric Bieniemy over Scott Turner. But like Ron Rivera, I think, is the guy that likes Brian Robinson, and Ron Rivera is still probably making a lot of decisions here as the head coach for this team. So I think that Antonio Gibson can definitely be involved. He can definitely be a useful player. He will probably be more involved if he's on the roster than a guy like, you know, Amir Abdullah or Zamir White was, if we're talking about the, like, this year's Josh Jacobs thing. But, you know, I think Brian Robinson is another guy that I think when you watch him, he's a quality NFL back. He's not like, he's not special. He's not exciting. Josh Jacobs was a damn first round pick. Like, you know, he's probably more of an exciting player than Brian Robinson is. But Robinson's like a steady, quality grinder back. He had a lot of good games late last year. I think some of the lower success rate metrics for him, or, you know, some of the overall numbers that aren't so great. This guy got shot in the leg last preseason, early on in the season. And by the way, he had like basically run away with the starting running back job in the offseason. Whether you agree with it or not, he was clearly going to be the top guy in week one. And then he got shot again. I say got shot in the leg, kind of an important thing for the running back position. So I just think that this is a guy that is a good player. And if the offense takes a leap, and if you've listened to any of these Flip the Script episodes so far, I feel like this is the damn like 10th episode in a row. I mean, we've only done five, but this is like the fifth episode in a row I've somehow snuck into. I really like the Commanders offense this year. Like, if this offense takes a little leap, I think Brian Robinson could take a little leap, man.
Okay, a couple things. I think people are underrating just how good this wide receivers in Washington could be. McLaurin, Dotson, and Samuel, my guy Sam Howell, or even Brissett, only has to be average for that offense to be pretty good. Brian Robinson definitely impressed at times as a runner, but my counter to you is simple. 12 targets all last season. Yeah. So it's going to be tough for him to even come close to Jacobs unless there's a gigantic leap in the target department.
I think that will keep him out of like a top five ceiling. You know, if we're talking about like who could be a surprising top five running back, unless he scores like 15 touchdowns or something, which is probably like not possible. I don't really think that's possible. So, but yeah, I mean, just again, a good quality player. Like if you just look at it from week 12 to week 17, 97 carries, 435 yards, didn't score any touchdowns, again, to my point. only eight targets for 53 yards and a touchdown. So, yeah, I think a good quality back, but I don't know. I like, let me tell you what, I'm more excited to draft Brian Robinson where he's going to go than where James Conner is going to go, just because I think this offense could take a leap.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Connor's my easy one out in the finalists, the more I think about it. So I hear you there. But he just needs to get more involved in the passing game. And hey, players get better. It's entirely possible. But man, there's a lot of steam right now on Gibson. You're not buying it at all?
I consider me highly skeptical.
All right, fair.
But I think that of all of these backs, I mean, Dave Montgomery is going to be in some kind of committee. Honestly, the more I look at it, the only guy who's not going to be in a committee here is probably Miles Sanders, which maybe could influence us when we get to the voting part here. But yeah, I mean, Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson is definitely going to mix in there. They're going to have him be, I don't know, you know, J.D. McKissic, not really in the mix at this point. Chris Rodriguez, they said they had a third round grade on him. I mean, I can't. Why did you take him in the sixth round or wherever they took him? I don't know. So
yeah, no, McKissic. That's true. Yeah, he was in the way last year for those targets. Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say about Antonio Gibson that again leads me to be skeptical is I think part of the analysis that people throw out there is, well, look, if you're thinking about Eric Bieniemy's system, Antonio Gibson's a better fit for the system than Brian Robinson. I mean, really? Like Isaiah Pacheco is basically like just a banger back, and he was a huge reason why this offense like got it to the Super Bowl last year. Obviously not even the second, third, or fourth biggest reason, but like his addition as just a pure power runner helped that offense along a lot. Like they don't necessarily just need like a slashing back. I think sometimes when they've just tried to have a slashing back, they haven't been a very good offense. So that's one thing that I also bristle on the Antonio Gibson part of it.
All right, fair. You're in on him.
I just want to point out for Robinson, you did mention he could get better with the targets. I did go back and look at Alabama. So his first year he was really playing, he had 11 receptions. And then his next year, only 6. But
not great.
His last year at Alabama, Harmon, this helps you. It did jump to 35 receptions and 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I assume that's a backfield Gibbs was involved with as well at Alabama. So he has the potential maybe for 40 because he did it his last year at Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking for like 40 catches, 50 catches, something like that from any of these guys, honestly. Brian Robinson, probably the least likely to hit that of our, what sounds like it's going to be our 3 finalists here. But yeah, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just drunk on Commanders hype. I would say too, if Sam Howell takes over and he's like a little bit of a rusher, that probably also hurts Brian Robinson's candidacy. Oh, but right, yeah. your guy Howell, you know, he's going to definitely run for 800 yards or something like that.
Not quite built for it, but yeah, their projections, I'm telling you, 40 yards per game. But yeah, that is another counter to you. Good point there. But you want to put him as finalist? Go for it. We'll see. We'll throw him in for Colin.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna take him. I'm gonna take James Conner off the list. I'm sorry, James Conner, who I think is a good player, and I'm fine with drafting. But like, if he plays, you know, 10 games,
there's no way he's holding up. Yeah,
it plays 10 games and averages literally 3 yards per carry or something like that. That's within the range of outcomes here. So okay, our 3 finalists: Dalton, David Montgomery, Brian Robinson, Miles Sanders. You put those in order. I'll put them in order. And if we need to do a tie break, we have to do a tie break. I think every episode so far, Colin will break the tie for us. So you go first. Order those 1 to 3. Miles Sanders, Brian Robinson, David Montgomery. Who is most likely to be this year's Josh Jacobs?
I'm going to go Montgomery 1, Sanders 2, Robinson 3.
Okay. I think I'm going to go Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, Brian Robinson. So I think Colin has to break a tie for us here.
I was debating
I was really going to go with Brian Robinson, but I got him into the finalist list here. I think I made my point on Brian Robinson that I think some of the hate I see on the Twitter streets for this guy is probably going a little too far. I mean, I made the shot in the leg point clear enough. I think, look, he's like a candidate that, you know, you like in the primaries, but you know, is not going to win the whole thing. You know, they're not going to take the White House. That's basically how I feel about old Brian Robinson here. I'm glad I got my point across. But yeah, my rankings are going to go Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, Brian Robinson. So Colin, between Miles Sanders and David Montgomery, who do you think is more likely to be this year's Josh Jacobs, you know, potentially sneak into the top 5 backs here?
I do want to say all 3, I think we can all confidently say, will be great values when you're drafting them in August. So I think just distilling to that is great. I think the thing that separates Miles Sanders from Montgomery is, again, opportunity, target share. And also, I need to see Montgomery's contract in front of me, but the Lions invested a first-round pick in a running back, so they're going to want to use that running back. The Panthers have nothing standing in the way for Miles Sanders being a dominant target hoarder this season. And if he's RB19, there's an easy path, I think, for Miles Sanders to be a top 10 running back this year. So I think the answer is clear. It's Miles Sanders is this year's Josh Jacobs.
He could compile his way to like a top 10 season and not even be that good this year just because there's nobody else on this offense. I think Dalton, the Jahmyr Gibbs thing is what really holds me back from David Montgomery. Like, what Colin said, breaks the ties in favor of, I mean, they both of these guys got a pretty decent investment this year in the free agent market. I think I'm going to be ahead of consensus on David Montgomery. I think I'm going to be only slightly ahead of consensus on Miles Sanders. I will say this to David Montgomery's point, Dalton, that like if he becomes this year's Josh Jacobs, it's probably going to be slightly more valuable to the people that draft him than if Miles Sanders does. Because I think Sanders is going to go around like running back 20 or something. Like I said, right now he's running back, 19 in consensus rankings. But somebody like Damian Pierce, who's ranked behind him, is going to jump him, you know, at some point. So I don't know. This was a close one to me between Sanders and Montgomery. I don't think it was as clear cut.
Yeah, firm but fair decision by Colin. I'm good with it. Actually, I was debating back and forth. I just like Detroit's upside ultimately, but I'm totally in on Gibbs, and I hope he stays healthy and dominates. So, Carolina, Sanders is looking at all the touches there. No argument. Fair.
It's fair. Tough, but fair. All right. Well, Miles Sanders is this year's Josh Jacobs. I like it. Again, I think that this is the hardest one in terms of like they're going to replicate Josh Jacobs this season. You know, by the way, like Miles Sanders had a pretty good year last year. So that is one way that I don't think it's necessarily the cleanest fit in terms of calling him like this year's Josh Jacobs. He had, 1,200 yards, 11 touchdowns.
Yeah, 11 touchdowns. Good, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good player last year, but I do think, he's going to be a guy that, he's a guy that when drafts come around Dalton, people are gonna be like, oh, Miles Sanders, like, whatever. And I feel like that's how people were with maybe at one before the Hall of Fame game thing that Colin pointed out, like that was how people felt with Josh Jacobs last year, like, whatever, Josh Jacobs. And then like the vitriol got really harsh. So in that vein, it's gonna be tough to be like this year's Josh Jacobs, but I think Miles Sanders does make some sense.
Yeah, actually, the takeaway here is what's Rashad Penny going to do with those 45 red zone carries in that Philadelphia offense when he stays healthy this year? Actually, the answer is ultimately Penny's probably going to be the league winner here.
By the way, just real quick on the Rashad Penny thing, did you see like one beat writer say he might not even make the roster?
Yeah, and like I know his money is like below a few other guys on the roster. Yeah, I know. But though anyone saying that hasn't watched him play, I mean, come on now, give me a break.
I can't wait to see how the Eagles running back thing shakes out. That should be definitely really fun. All right. From one Niners super fan to a Niners superstar, we've got George Kittle coming up on the show here to talk all things tight end, Niners quarterbacks, and even maybe some Brandon Ayuk hype. Let's take a listen. All right. Absolutely psyched now to be joined by 49ers tight end, George Kittle. George, what's going on, man? How's the offseason treating you?
Offseason going great, man. Excited to be here. Down football, get a little break before the season actually starts. No, so just getting the mind right, baby.
Yeah, love it. You're here on behalf of Tight End U, which is absolutely blown up over. Yeah, you're rocking the shirt presented by Charmin. Shout out. You've got plenty. I mean, George, you've got plenty of plugs there in the background. We love to see it. All great stuff, by the way. All great stuff. It's absolutely blown up here the last couple of years, Tight End U. But for the uninitiated, can you kind of explain what it's all about and maybe give us a preview of who's coming this year and what those tight ends can expect?
Wow. I'm excited you asked. So let me give you some information. Greg Olson, Travis Kelce, George Kittle brought our big, big football brains together. We're like, hey, what if we brought all the tight ends to Nashville and hung out, got to get to know each other a little bit, maybe talked a little bit of ball. And our first year we had in high school, we had 50 guys show up, great sponsors and that whole shebang. Following year, had 85 people sign up, had to move it to Vanderbilt University. Their football program has been so kind enough to let us use all their facilities. It's fantastic. Their fields, their meeting rooms, everything. And so basically what we do is this. We're in for 3 days, a Tuesday night, Wednesday, and a Thursday. We bring guys to Vanderbilt. We talk ball. So anywhere from Travis Kelce talking about, hey, I'm running a basic route, which is a 12-yard in-breaking route. Hey, this is how I run it versus cover three. This is how I run it versus cover four. This is how I run it versus a one plug. And just the different ways that he's going to run that route. So that's an example of what Travis will talk about. Greg Olson is going to talk about, hey, this is how I stem to get in position to run these routes. I'll be talking gap scheme, power, counter, all the good stuff that people actually want to see on a football field, that good run game stuff. We have Gronk coming this year to talk a little bit about mindset, to talk about how to have fun, whatever he wants to talk about. Honestly, he's a savage. And then one of my favorite guests, we have Jordan Reed coming this year to talk releases. So we'll have a cut up of like how he gets inside leverage on a release. So because he has an in breaking route versus press man coverage, stuff like that. So a lot of stuff to learn. We're going to talk about recovery. We're going to talk about your mindset going into game weeks. So just to give these tight ends an understanding about how some of the top guys at the position think, and that's the biggest part of it. You know, have fun, get to know each other, talk a little bit about ball. But that's our big thing this year. Really excited about it.
Hey, Jordan Reed, that's like a, I'm not going to say a throwback name, but he was a stud, man. And like kind of just about 5 to 6 years just right before his time. You know what I mean? Like, that's a guy who, especially if you played fantasy, you know, in the mid 2010s or whatever, he was an absolute guy that you needed to have. So that's a cool name that's coming this year.
Yeah, he signed with the Niners in 2020, and unfortunately both of our seasons were kind of marred by injury. So we only were on the field together for like two games, but he was so fun to have in the locker room and just like to just bounce ideas off of him. Or we'd be watching tape together and he'd be like, AG, I think that you should step like this instead of like this. And you'd see his leverage move.
Interesting.
And then you could inside release. And I'd be like, oh yeah, dude, that makes total sense. Thank you, Jordan Reed. You're an absolute dog. And so, yeah, no, I'm excited about Jordan coming in because he's just a fun overall dude to hang out with as well.
Yeah, it feels like a pretty big mentorship, like a real brotherhood that you've got building there between the guys at the tight end position. You know, last time you and I talked at the Super Bowl, right before the Super Bowl there.
You had a nice jacket on.
Yeah. Also, by the way, another Chubby's item, by the way, that jacket. So, Chubby's knows clothes. That's a free plug for them. Not sponsoring the podcast yet, but, you know, we're working on it. We're working on it. But anyways, yeah, I see it. I mean, look, again, George Kittle knows clothes, Chubby's knows clothes. But on the tight end stuff, like I mentioned to you that there is kind of this small movement in the fantasy community, even some like some big names, some of the dudes that, like, you know, I rub elbows with, right? Like they're out there kind of trying to say, like, maybe we need to just get rid of the tight end position. We need to merge it as just a total pass catcher thing or do something with the tight end position because it's just getting too hard, George. It's getting too hard to find like enough good tight ends to fill starting lineups. You know how I feel about that. But for the podcast listeners, I kind of wanted you to respond to maybe those, I don't want to call it cancel culture calls about the tight end position, but how do you feel about that as a tight end you rep?
You want to combine pass catchers into one position group, pay us all the same. And I'm down with it.
I mean, that's fair. That it is quite a large salary gap there between, and I'm a wide receiver guy. Like I run a whole service charting wide receivers, the whole thing. I spend a lot of time watching wide receivers, but the pay gap between the two positions, given all that you guys have to do on the field, is a little bit dramatic, shall we say.
Here's my thing. This has been my argument for like 2 years plus. Travis Kelce has led the NFL in the last 6 years in receiving total receiving yards. Or I think he's maybe first or second behind maybe Davante Adams. That's the only thing. How many starting right wide receivers would you pick over Travis Kelce? Legit, like just on your team. Maybe 4 to 5. Not, yeah. I mean, not very many. So how is Travis Kelce getting paid $14.5-15 million? And there are second string wide receivers getting paid $22 million. And that's been my biggest question of all time is you have one of the most dominant people in football, averaging over 1,000 yards a year, 10 touchdowns a year, and he's making half of what he probably should be. And like, I know Travis is a fantastic guy and he's like, I don't care about the money. I just want to win Super Bowls,
which is
all of our mindsets. But when you compare it like that and the running back market, like Christian McCaffrey makes 16 when he has 2,000 yards from scrimmage every single season. Don't get me started on that. But there's some disparity. And, you know, if you want to combine these positions, pay us all the same. You guys do you. And I'm totally fine with it.
I don't know how many fantasy football commissioners have that much pull with the salary structure within the league.
Sign a petition. Just get a petition going. We'll make it work. Those work.
There you go. All right. Yeah. I mean, how many online petitions are there these days? We can get another one going for combining. If we want to combine all the tight ends and pass catchers, we got to do something about the salary disparity there. My big push with the whole, how do we get tight ends to be more, I don't know, relevant in fantasy or more predictable is I think we just need to kind of restore the middle class. Like you've mentioned that's my campaign slogan. I mean, you can go to bat with that one. There's Travis Kelce up at the top. There's guys like you up at the top. I think we need to see kind of like the next wave come in. So my question to you, George, is who are kind of like maybe 3, 4, 5 under the radar tight ends right now? Maybe some guys that you've seen at tight end U or, you know, that you've just kind of watched across the league who could maybe be next at the position.
I don't know. Like, in my opinion, he doesn't count as underrated, but like, I think people are mildly disrespectful to him. I think Dallas Goedert is a fantastic tight end. He's one of the few guys in the league that is good in the run game and that puts a lot of effort in the run game, all the while being a really good pass catcher and runs great routes and catches everything you throw at him. So I think Dallas Goedert is fantastic. I know he had an injury thing last year, so that kind of screwed him a little bit. But I mean, he's going to come back healthy as ever. They have a great team. So he's going to have a great year. I'm really excited about my guy, Sam Laporta, the rookie.
Okay.
For Lions. I worked out with him for like 2-3 weeks. I've known him for a couple years. I do think he's going to be very talented. They're going to feed him the rock. If they don't, I mean, he's going to win them games. He's a very talented football player. Besides that, I like Bellinger out of the Giants. I think he's a good tight end. He does a lot of good stuff. My guy Fergie for the Dallas Cowboys, Ferguson. I like him as well. He had some splash plays last year. Besides that, I know like you're going to look at, you got Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, George Kittle, Darren Waller. I would say Dallas Goedert. And if I'm missing somebody, I'm sorry about that. But I like there is a little bit of disparity occasionally. But I do think like every year there's just like a couple injuries that take out like three guys in that middle gap. And that's what the gap is then, because like some guys don't fill that up and relax. But, but I do think the point of tight end you is also like to bring these guys and raise up that level of play. And so that helps with, you know, contracts, and also helps with you, our fantasy football coaches, because we don't want to let you guys down.
Well, especially last year, the injuries, I mean, you know, you played 15 games, Mark Andrews played 15 games. You know, there was a lot, Darren Waller had injury problems. Like even Dallas Goedert, who had a fantastic season, like you mentioned, he had some injury issues, but these guys all stay healthy. Like we're talking about, the tight end position is totally fine last year. I love that you brought up Jake Ferguson, because he's a guy that, you know, they move on from Dalton Schultz. He signs with the Texans. He could kind of moonwalk into that starting job, even though they drafted Luke Schoonmaker. You know, we typically see tight ends maybe take a couple of years. Actually, on that note, why do you think that is? That, I mean, as an expert in the field, George, why do you think it takes, you know, maybe a couple of years sometimes for these guys to get fully comfortable in the league, even if they're like early round draft picks?
My biggest thing is, I don't know, not very many colleges are pro style anymore. A lot of them are, you know, five wide. And so a lot of these tight ends that are getting drafted are in a 2-point stance their entire career. And then for the first time in OTAs, they put their hand in the dirt and they have to know what a 9 technique is, a 6 technique. They have to look at the linebacker and then the safety rotating. And it's just a lot of information, to try to, you know, get in your brain. And hey, all the while, make sure you memorize our entire offensive playbook with run plays, pass plays, and everything else that we do. And so it's just a lot going on, the amount of stuff you have to learn. You're not just, all right, hey, this is a concept. It's a bow concept. We have a 6-yard hook with a base behind it. It's not just that. You have to know, you know, you're usually the guy that motions the most because it's the easiest motion, because you're the closest to the line, you're the closest to the tackles. You're learning motions, you're learning alignments. You have your hand in the dirt for the first time. There's just a lot that goes into learning the tight end position. And I think it just takes a little bit of time. And the best way to learn is just get thrown in the fire. Like, I was really lucky my rookie season. Yeah. And I started as a rookie, and while I'm not going to say I wasn't great, but our team wasn't also like, we weren't great. And so like I could mess up, and it was like, it wasn't the worst thing. I wasn't on a Super Bowl contending team that was trying to win a Super Bowl, so every rep wasn't like magnified. But so like, that's helpful. You just got to get these guys reps. And I think that's really what it is. It's just the more reps you get, then that's how you get to be good. And it's just hard to be a rookie and just step in, because hey, all of a sudden, instead of running a stick route, you have to block Max Crosby and Chandler Jones.
Right.
Hey, good luck. But don't worry about it, man. You're going to run a route the next play, and you have to read the coverage. You have to run the route on, hey, Jalen Ramsey's in the nickel today. Good luck. They do that too.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot, right? Like, you got to learn to run routes like a wide receiver, and then you also have to block like a tackle. And I always tell people this, it's like, if you run routes from like the split out slot position, that's a lot different than running routes as the inline tight end. Like, where you start on the play matters a whole lot. And you guys just get whether you get thrown into the fire early or not, even from like a practice standpoint, you're getting thrown into the fire either way. Hey, a couple questions about the quarterback situation. You know, I'm not going to sit here and ask you a bunch of questions about it, you know, but you did recently say Trey Lance looks significantly better this year than he has previously. What's kind of gone into that improvement for him, or what have you seen out of Trey so far this offseason?
Let's see. Talking about Trey, I think the number one thing that I've seen that makes me like very positive about the situation is you can just tell he's having a good time out there. He's got a smile on his face. It doesn't look like he has thousands of pounds of pressure on his shoulders. Like, he's just out there trying to be better at football, trying to throw the ball and get our guy, like, just throw our guys open. And so you can like feel that in the huddle too. And he just like he just has more of a comfort, like he's more comfortable in the huddle too, which kind of puts everyone in the huddle with him at ease. And so that's one of my biggest things. Besides that, I think he's just healthy. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize he messed up his finger his rookie season, and that thing lingered and it didn't really. And like when you mess up a finger on your throwing hand, it kind of changes how you throw a football. And like he was making passes this year, or just in OTAs, that he was struggling with last year. And, you know, that's when I say he looks significantly better. Is like my biggest thing about that was last day of mini camp, we connected like on a 60-yard touchdown. It's basically like a box fade, start in the slot, widen, get outside and throw a fade. And he let me work my route, threw me away from the safety, touchdown. And that was a play that we had struggled on connecting on in training camp the year before. And so, hey, first try, touchdown. It's fun to see those steps forward. And so that was a big part of it too. But really just like his confidence himself, I think, has risen as well. And just being healthy and playing with the guys, just getting a little bit more time to, you know, practice and learn the playbook. And that's why, like, he is significantly better. And I'm excited about that because I'm excited about our quarterback competition between the three and, you know, maybe four, whoever's back there. I know it's going to be a good competition, so I'm just looking forward to that. And also, this is my fifth straight year of quarterback controversy questions, so I'm all in, baby.
You're used to it. You're used to it at this point, man. And I'm not going to say it's, like, totally wide open, but I do feel like I'm ready to believe anything about, you know, these guys, Purdy, Trey Lance, even Sam Darnold. Like, this offense just really tends to raise the floor of quarterback play because you got so many good players. You got a good play calling head coach. I'm even Trey Lance, a guy that I think some people have kind of written off at this point. You know, I think he could easily emerge and get back to kind of where the team maybe viewed him when they traded all those draft picks. So I'm excited to see what happens as well. My last question for you here, George. I didn't mention this last time we spoke, but like I told you, I'm a wide receiver guy. I run a service where I chart wide receivers. I spend a lot of time focusing on the position. I have thought since he came into the league, Brandon Ayuk has like all the traits and abilities to be like the next superstar receiver. You know, people look at box scores and he had a good season last year, right? But I'm telling you, it's like an individual guy, separator, route runner against press man coverage. This guy's got like everything to be like a 1,500 yard receiver, you know, in whatever the right situation is. Can you tell the people what makes Brandon like a special player? Because I really think he's ready to like kind of join that group potentially this year.
I agree with you. And I'll tell you what makes him a special player. And then the one thing that's preventing him from those 1,400 yard seasons. Okay. I know you like that, don't you? What makes him a special player is his mindset. Every day he goes out there, he's like, I don't know what he's saying to himself, but he goes out there with the intention to disrespect people by how he runs routes, how open he gets, and how he catches the football, and then how he tries to score after every time he catches the ball. We're at OTA's practices, and he's making a corner fall down, catch the ball, and then he's running for 40 yards after that because he's trying to get into his brain, yak, and I'm going to score every single play. And if you can have that mindset going into a football game that, why would I caught a slant, why would I not score a touchdown? And that's the mindset that you have to be great. And just his mindset, his work ethic, it's incredible. And I know Debo had a quote that said, you know, you couldn't cover him in a phone booth right now. You couldn't. I think Brandon caught almost every ball that was thrown to him. He made guys, he's wide and slipping. His releases were on point. Everything was just punctual about him. His intent was there. Every rep mattered to him. And when you can have that mindset on every single day, especially like in an OTAs practice where at the end of the day, you're not making the team during OTAs, but you can still get better if you do it the right way. That was Brandon. And he's going to carry that over throughout this 40 days away, right into training camp. And the one thing that's could be preventative of him getting that is that he unfortunately shares a team with Debo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Kyle Juszczyk, Juwan Jennings, Ray McCloud. Like we have a very, very talented offense with really good players on it. And hey, we can run the ball 35 times a game and probably win. Or if we need to, we can throw the ball 35 times a game and win. And it's just like, we have this offense that is balanced and is able to do everything. Look, if you put Brandon on a team where he could get 15 targets a game, you're looking at 100 to 150 yards a game. He's incredible. And so, you know, I hope that he has games this year where we give him that opportunity. And I hope that we have games this year where we're throwing the ball 40 times a game and spreading the ball out to all of our playmakers. But, you know, every time he touches the ball, he has a chance to score. He's fantastic. And he's going to have another great year this year. And I'm really looking forward to watching him go ball out.
Yeah, pretty, pretty good setup you guys got there in San Francisco with all those weapons. And yeah, it's like you can look at box scores, stuff like that, but that's why you got to watch these guys in isolation to really see kind of you guys fit skill set wise.
Yeah, like there's clips this year where he doesn't get the ball on, and it's just because, hey, the first read was open and he's like the second or third read just because it's that given play. And he just cooks dudes, and it's so fun to watch. And you go back, like, one of his best games was the Raiders this year, and he was just abusing dudes.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And it's fun, too, because that was a game. I think he had, like, 12 targets. He had, like, he was, like, 11 for 12 or something like that with, like, 100-plus yards. And it's just like, yes, he can do that every game. He really can. If you watch the tape, there's games that he has three catches for 30 yards, and there's seven other plays that he was wide open on because he's working people. And so, like, I know that he knows that we see it. And so, yes, I know, hey, all of us skill position, we would all love to have 100 yards and a touchdown a game. We all would. But at the end of the day, what's the cool thing about the 49ers is we're winning games and our best players are getting the ball. We're all pretty good with it. You know, I had games, I had like four catches for 40 yards. We're winning. Sure, I'd like to contribute more, but hey, I'm going to make my presence known in the run game. But like, that's just kind of how our team is. It is whatever happens, happens. And as long as we're winning football games, we're just going to keep putting our head down and just keep working.
Yeah, trust me. If anybody's seen those routes where he's not getting the ball, but he's getting wide ass open, it's me, man. No, trust me, buddy. I've seen him. Hey, George, I really appreciate your time. Great discussion about what an unselfish, awesome group you guys got there in the tight end position as a whole. Tell the people out there, all the listeners, viewers, where they can find out more about tight end you, where they can follow along with you guys, what's going on this offseason.
Look, guys, Tight End University, find us on Instagram, find us on Twitter. We have a shop now. We have a bunch of cool stuff, kind of fraternity themed this year. We got a bunch of Greek letters and stuff like that. You're going to really enjoy it. It's going to be a great time. And the whole thing, the only reason we can do it is because of our sponsors. We have a fantastic sponsor in Charmin. They're back again. They're our number one sponsor. You can see it on the t-shirt. Wow. Look at that. Charmin.
Look at that.
Why? Tight ends and Charmin. That goes hand in hand together. Another big sponsor is Levi's, because what tight end doesn't look great in a pair of Levi's jeans? Just fantastic. Let's see. We got Bridgestone is coming back. It's our third year in a row with Bridgestone. They've been a fantastic partner with us in Nashville. The cool thing is this year we're actually bringing 150 high school kids in and 50 middle schoolers to talk about literacy and why that's important. And so we'll have about 20 to 25 tight ends talking to them about that. I'm really excited about that whole process. It's going to be pretty cool. And then our other big one, Raising Cane's right above my head. Love Raising Cane's, Raising Cane sauce. Todd Graves, the owner of it. It's very, very excited to include them because I do absolutely love that. And I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I actually do thoroughly enjoy it. And I was the one that I asked, like, hey, can we get Raising Cane's a part of this? And then they finally said yes. So it's pretty awesome.
Hey, love to see it. Hey, if this is going to be a big revival year for the tight end position, it's going to start right there at Tight End University. Love to see it, George. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time today, man.
See you, Matt.
All right, Dalton. George Kittle was awesome. You were awesome, though. Let's be clear about that. But I'm sure you got very excited listening to what. You will get excited hearing what George Kittle had to say about Trey Lance at the very least. But I appreciate you doing this show with me, man. Like I said, this was a tough one here. This year's Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
All right, buddy. Appreciate you. That is going to do it for this show. Shout out to Dalton Del Don and George Kittle for stopping by. We are back next Tuesday with the one and only Andy Behrens to continue our Flip the Script series. Oh boy, we get negative again. Who is going to be this year's Rams? The team that falls off a cliff into the absolute abyss. Or maybe like the front runners for Caleb Williams in 2024. Until then, we are out.